Last Word on Today FM.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the Culture Club today by a man who's on RT Lyric FM each morning, but is also fronting the Understanding Shingles campaign. Marty Whelan, thank you very much for joining us. Shingles, is this a condition that you've suffered from?
No, it's not something I've suffered from, thank God, but it is something that I know people who have, and it's a bugger of a yoke. And I suppose it's like anything, when you talk about being a certain age, and as I approach middle age, I'm very conscious that, like anybody over 50, needs to be aware of this. And it's an awareness campaign, really, that's being run. And it is really saying to people that, you know, there's a chance that you can get this. There's, you know, one in three people are going to get it. And it's about understanding it and not being afraid to get it checked or something, because it's very painful. And I know that from people who I know who have had it. So it's really about awareness. And that's really what I'm trying to do to get the message across.
I had it about 20 years ago. It's that far, but I can still remember. I can still remember the pain, the high temperatures, the potential for developing pneumonia out of which I didn't, thankfully, but I was also blistered from top to toe, and you're trying not to pick at anything. Oh, I came back in here after about a week, and the blisters still hadn't fully healed. I wasn't contagious at that stage, but my God, I looked like something from The Walking Dead coming in to present the programme.
And I mean, the whole idea, when you think about it, people will, as you know, people think it's easily gotten from somebody who has it. So I suspect people ran away from you like mad things, did they?
Well, they do that anyway, Marty, but they were just a bit faster in doing it this time. I blame my children. I got it from my children. They were all small at the time. They all had the chicken pox.
Oh, you see, that's the thing.
I picked it up. But anyway, enough of shingles.
That's it. You can get it from, and you can get chicken pox from someone with shingles. If you've never had chicken pox, it's just, anyway, it's about understanding. Well, I'm glad you've recovered.
Ah, that was 20 years ago, Marty.
I know.
I would want to have recovered in that time, wouldn't I?
You would, for sure. You would stricken. But anyway, I'm glad you did. But that's what I'm doing. That's helping them out. That's what I'm doing.
All right. Well, listen, Culture Club, thank you. You filled in the questionnaire. We have all the answers to all of the questions. And we start with every guest with the first single that you can ever remember buying. And you've gone for the Monkees.
I've gone for the Monkees. I've gone for Last Train to Clarksville. Now, there is a slight contention, as both my folks are gone. Let me explain. The Monkees were my first hero band. I told everyone as a small child that the Monkees would be far bigger than the Beatles. That's how clever I was. And Last Train to Clarksville is their first hit, and I loved it. And just to fill you in, I had a party piece when I was very small, Walk Tall by Val Doonican. And I used to perform this for my aunts and various relatives at the drop of a hat. And it had very strange lines in it, like, I got in trouble with the law and I'm in trouble now about hanging around with girls you shouldn't hang around with and all the rest of it. And I was very small. And of course, I always remember my parents being very proud, as you would be of an only child. But my granny slightly frowning at some of the lyrics that were coming out of my mouth at the time. But Walk Tall was that other one. But the Monkees were my heroes. I love them to bits.
Let's hear a little bit of Last Train to Clarksville.
Take the
That's a track that came out the year I was born. I presume as well you were a big fan, Marty, were you, of the TV show that they had?
Yeah. It was an appointment to watch, Saturday Night Tea Time. And I had the Monkees Annuals and I had the Monkees Monthly Magazine. And it was my band. Do you know that crack? That suddenly this was my music as opposed to the music that my folks were playing at home. So yeah, they were a very big deal and they were huge, but actually for a very short time. It only lasted a few years. And then I went to see them. They played in The Point and it was brutal. But it was an appalling waste of an evening that I'll never get back.
graduated to the Beatles because you've given us your favourite album as the Beatles' Abbey Road. Why this one?
Without question, 1969. I think it's when, even though I came to it late, I think it's when I realised, hang on a second. And I marched around with it and it has remained my favourite album of all time. It's the sound of it, the fact that the track, all the tracks are completely and utterly different, of course, written by various different people, come together, John Lennon, at the opening, when you think about Something by George Harrison. It just is such an iconic album, and we had the great joy of doing the programme from that particular neck of the woods some years ago, and Abbey Road, to get inside the door was quite something. And so it's remained with me for forever, and I'm a Paul McCartney maniac, so it's very hard not to love it.
The track you mentioned from Abbey Road is Come Together, so let's hear a bit of it. Wonderful track, Come Together.
You were free, for God's sake. Mother of God.
Tell us now. Favorite,
cheering me up with that one.
Favorite artists. You've given us two. So before we hear a little bit of Van Morrison, tell us about your love for Frank Sinatra.
My love for Frank Sinatra goes back. I would have discovered him later, because Frank Sinatra meant an awful lot to our parents and further back. But I didn't discover him till the 70s. He made an album called All Blue Eyes Is Back, and there's some beautiful music on it. He does a version of Send In the Clowns that I think is, in my honest opinion, the best version there is. And for months I discovered him, then I went back. And over the years, I collected his albums on vinyl. And I just began a love affair with the guy. I just think his music is phenomenal. He was a very decent actor, I suppose, but I loved the voice, and to hear him and what he did with Nelson Riddle and those standards. So for me, Sinatra still stands up. I play Sinatra almost every day, just like Van. I know that's very overindulgent, but what can I do?
And what about Van Morrison? What's the attraction of Van Morrison?
Van speaks to my soul. Van has always been able to speak to my soul with his music, right from the very earliest stages, when you're talking about things like Moondance. And those albums, when I go back now, I will still play them, Avalon Sunset, or I will suddenly say Poetic Champions Compose. When I go to see Van, I'm blown away. I'm in heaven. It's not the bouncy ones necessarily, it's the ones that touch our heart. When my dad was very ill some years ago, before he passed, there was a song called See Me Through. I'm not asking you to play it, but it's on an album called Enlightenment, and it's an amazing song. And again, I would listen to that. And I had the opportunity to talk to Van about this. He's an only child, just like me. And we had a conversation about parents and family and stuff. And it was very special. Not long after I had lost my dad. So I got lucky. So he's always touched my soul. Yeah, Van will do that.
Well, the track we have is called Into the Mystic. Is that a category? Is that in the right frame of mind?
It's absolutely in the right space. I remember my friend Kevin Lennon, who I worked with, an old friend of mine from RT over the years, and that song I dedicated to him, strangely, that you should pick it when he passed. So, Van has a special place in my heart, and that won't change.
Let's hear Into the Mystic.
Oh, I can now hear the singers cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic. And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have the fear that I wanna rock your gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old. Yeah, magnificently we will fold into the mystic.
Van Morrison, Into the Mystic. Yeah. Best gig you were ever at, and I'm sure you've been at many gigs, Marty, but you've picked Bruce Springsteen's first major Irish appearance at Slane in 1985.
Mm-hmm. It's indelibly marked on my brain. It was, we had been fans of Lars, Marie and I have been fans of Bruce Springsteen from his earliest stuff. And we connected with him. I just loved his lyrics and I loved his style and all the rest of it. And 1985 is the year we got married, my wife and I, not Bruce and I. But it was the year that he played. It was the biggest gig he'd ever played up to then. And to see him and seething, there must have been 100,000 people there, to see him in that, on that beautiful day in June, on the 1st of June, in Slane, was spectacular. It was just mind-blowing, because to me it was the biggest gig I would think I was ever at. And look, I've been at many gigs over the years, and you're right, I got lucky enough to see Sinatra. Take that, when they did the circus, there were so many great gigs, but there was something about Bruce, born in the USA in 1985, that has stayed with me. And but then going to see Bruce is always a real pleasure. Every time I was mad about him.
Let's hear a little bit, a short clip from the archives of his first appearance at Slane in 1985. That wouldn't have been the first Slane concert, Marty, but I think back in that era, in the 1980s, we hadn't become complacent, perhaps, in the way that we are now, about getting all of the big acts coming on a regular basis to Ireland.
Absolutely. We didn't have them, because you basically had Jim Aiken bringing in the acts. I remember Bob Dylan played in Slane, and I loved Santana. Santana were on before him. You're going to love this. And I went down and went and saw Santana and loved them. And I said, well, I'll be off then. And I didn't stay for Bob Dylan, which is sacrilege, I know. But I just wanted to hear Santana. Anyway, I was young and innocent. But I look back on those days. Tin Lizzy played at U2, all that.
Tin Lizzy and U2 were the first act at Slane in 1981. And apparently there was only about 18,000 people at it, although I'm sure many more claimed that they were.
Are you serious? Is that all? I didn't know. I wasn't at that. Because like you, I was very young at the time. I'm clinging to your age group very, fairly rapidly. But I just, yes, Slane was, with Bruce, It was phenomenal. We'd never seen that. I don't think we'd seen that like it before. And then, of course, you had Queen later on and stuff and all of that. But no, Bruce, 1985, favourite forever.
Need to take a break. We'll be back with more of Marty Whelan's Culture Club after we've had the traffic. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Marty Whelan is with us. You know him as a radio and TV star for decades, but he's also fronting the Understanding Shingles campaign, which we spoke about at the start of today's Culture Club. So let's move away from the music, Marty, and favourite movie, actor and directors. Now, you've given us a couple of things. Let's talk about the movie Moonstruck. Who's in that and why is it that you've picked that?
Moonstruck is an amazingly romantic film. It's Cher at her best. Cher, whatever about her singing, and I'm slightly not terribly bothered about that, but her acting is phenomenal. She's a really solid, believable actress in this movie, and it's Nicolas Cage is in it too, and it's about love, it's about finding love, losing love, and finding it again. It's just a great film with a beautiful soundtrack. Puccini's music is used in it, Renato Tabaldi singing. And it's just New York, Italian romantic film. It's fantastic. I love it a bit. And it features opera in it, but that's the mainstay from the music point of view. But the movie is just joyous. Have you ever seen it? No?
I can't remember it. I suspect I might have, but it's not one that actually is lodged in my memory.
We must, we must get you the DVD and let you.
What's a DVD?
With your family. Do you remember DVDs? Remember them? But no doubt you could download it. It's just a terribly romantic film, and she is transformed in it. She's transformed.
Well, we have a scene from it, and it includes Cher and Nicolas Cage and Danny Aiello. Let's hear it.
Johnny, I mean, your mother was dying. How did she recover?
I told my mother we would have been married, and she got well right away.
I'm sure she did.
It was a miracle.
Yeah. Oh, what a miracle.
Johnny, I have something that I have to tell you.
And I have something to tell you. But I must talk to you alone.
No, I need my family around me now.
Loretta, I can't marry you.
What?
If I marry you, my mother will die.
What the hell are you talking about? We're engaged.
Loretta, what are you talking
about? I'm talking about a promise, okay? He proposed.
Because my mother was dying, and now she's not.
Oh, Johnny, you're 42 years old. She's still running your life.
And you are a son who doesn't love his mother.
You are a big liar, okay? Because I have a ring right here.
Oh, I must ask for that back.
All right, the engagement is off.
In time, you will see that this is the best thing.
In time, you'll drop dead, and I'll come to your funeral in a red dress.
There we are, Moonstruck.
A lot of dialogue. Olympia Dukakis is in it too. It's a very pleasant hour and a half. It's a gorgeous little film.
But you've also given us Al Pacino as a favourite actor and Serpico as movie, which would be a lot grittier than Moonstruck.
It certainly would, very different. Al Pacino, of course, Al Pacino is, like, when we think of The Godfather, he did a great film, Scarecrow, with Gene Hackman, which I loved. But I go back with to Donnie Brasco and Glengarry Glen Ross and all these things. Serpico was a great film. He played an undercover detective, a real life. There was a fellow called Frank Serpico who was an undercover detective in New York, and it's about corruption and stuff. I'll tell you an interesting one. We have a dog called Alfie, an old English sheepdog. And in the movie, he buys an old English sheepdog puppy and calls him Alfie. And my wife said to me, if we ever get one of them, we'll call him Alfie. And now here we are years later and we have Alfie here. So Pacino is just, for me, I just love watching him and the craft of what he does. And I mean, he was in, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Yes, he was. So like, he crops up. He's not doing major roles anymore. The man's 82 or something. But he's still, for me, he's my fave. He's my favourite.
Now, we asked for favourite play, theatre show, musical, and you gave us a great list because you have An Inspector Calls, Scrooge at the Gate, and Mary Poppins. Take us through those. Inspector Calls.
Okay, well, Inspector Calls is J.B. Priestley, which is a bit silly, and it's an old school drama, I suppose, about a detective who comes and basically talks to his family about a disappearance. He goes through the whole process. I won't spoil the end of it in case you ever want to see it or read it or go to it, because it's been on the gate, I think, a couple of times. And it's just a great old yarn. Alistair Sim was in the film originally, but it was at gate some time ago, and I loved it. And J.B. Priestley is a kind of a master of this, and it was just brilliant. Scrooge at the Gate was Owen Roe, Christmas pre-COVID, and it was mesmerizing. They used the stage, but they used the center of the Gate Theatre, and as you know, the Gate Theatre is not huge. They used the center of it, and Owen Roe he just exploded as Scrooge. He was brilliant. It was a great cast, and it was a very special night. Mary Poppins, because we went to see it in London, and it's coming back to the board, gosh, but we went to see it in London some years ago when the children were smaller. And to see Mary Poppins elevate across the stage, that's just very special. It's the magic of childhood. It's a lovely thing. And to see all the little faces looking up as she flies across on her umbrella is quite spectacular. Three very different pieces, I know, but just, you know, different things that give us pleasure.
We're going to play a little bit from Mary Poppins' Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
When trying to express oneself, it's frankly quite absurd to leaf through lengthy lexicons to find the perfect word. A little spontaneity keeps conversation keen. You need to find a way to say precisely what you mean. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious. If you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It can mean exactly what you want it to. When Stone Age men were chatting, simply grunting would suffice.
Now if they'd heard this word, they might have used it once or twice.
That's right.
I'm sure Egyptian pharaohs would have grasped it in a jiff. Mm-hmm. Then every single pyramid would bear this hieroglyph. Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Say it and wild animals would not seem so.
There you are, Mary Poppins. Now, favourite book or author, you have gone for a weighty biography as your favourite book, Marty. And it is?
Yeah. It's Let the Trumpet Sound from Stephen B. Oates, which is a biography of Martin Luther King.
Why have you picked that?
Well, Martin Luther King had a huge influence when I was in school. Again, that would 1968. I would have been in school. There's a number like American politics. One of my great hobbies is American politics. I love it. what a time to be talking about it.
Yeah, will you be glued now to the television next week for the Count and the Trump Harris battle?
I'll be like an idiot watching it. And it's very seriously. I absolutely adore it. I've always had a great thing for American politics. But anyway, that came from the 70s. Martin Luther King beforehand, in the 60s, and his assassination. I suppose, in fairness, is there an orator like him? Well, there is. Obama would be. And Martin Luther King, just, I read his books because when he died, I found it very affecting, and I was only young for it. But as I got older then, I started to pick up his books. And I read Stephen B. Oates, and I just thought it was an amazing book. But like Martin Luther King wrote books himself, and they're worth having a read. And it's really, when you think about it, it's trying to instill in people how to live as best you can. And I think Martin Luther King was, for me, the epitome of that truth. So, yeah, a huge influence on me, and I suppose an influence on how I try to live parts of my life in a way.
Okay, well, actually, we're going to play a little bit from the audiobook of Let the Trumpet Sound by Stephen B. Oates. This is narrated by Carrie Height.
Reverend King preached in remarkable oratorical flourishes, his voice ranging from a booming baritone to a near shriek. ML looked up to his father with a mixture of awe, respect, intimidation, and embarrassment. He thought Daddy awfully emotional. After worship came Sunday dinner at church, succulent fried chicken, ham, black-eyed peas, and watermelon, and then more devotionals and religious activities that lasted into the night. The boy was at church all day on Sunday and part of the afternoons and evenings on weekdays. The church defined his little boy world, gave it order and balance, taught him how to get along with people. Here, ML knew who he was. Reverend King's boy. Somebody special. Home was only 3 blocks away on Auburn Avenue, in a sedate neighborhood in a middle-class section of Black Atlanta. The house was a two-story Victorian dwelling, with a banister ML and little brother AD liked to slide down. One day, ML was leaning against the banister and suddenly fell over it headfirst, plunging 20 feet to the floor and bouncing through an open door into the cellar. As though by a miracle, he wasn't hurt.
Great choice. That Let the Trumpet Sound by Stephen B. Oates. Okay, Marty, give us a favourite TV show from when you were a child or a teenager.
Well, from a childhood thing, I would have been besotted being naughty. Trumpet, all these mad things. Naughty was a fine fella. His friendship with Big Ears, which has been discussed many times. But anyway, and the roly-polies and all these things that you can't say anymore. Naughty, from Enid Blyton, when you look back at Naughty and you look at some of the characters, you wouldn't actually get away with much of it today. But it's Naughty was wonderful. The Naughty car, the whole bit. So yeah, Naughty was my small boy thing.
And the monkeys you told us about. So I presume you also grew up big on Top of the Pops, did you?
Of course. Every Thursday night, mad for Top of the Pops on the telly because it was a very big deal. And it's funny because, you know, you look back on those and again, appointments to watch. It was a big deal to sit down and watch these things. It really mattered, you know.
And then your adult choices. Now I understand, given what you said about your obsession with American politics, as to why you have The West Wing on your list.
Oh, Martin Sheen, fabulous. There's a president you'd want to have. The West Wing. People used to say, when they'd watch The West Wing, wouldn't you hate to be the stupid one in the room? Because everybody seemed to be terribly bright and well-meaning and upright and all the rest of it. The West Wing, loved it to bits. 30-something is another one, which is, there was a program recently called, a season called This Is Us. About a family, and 30-something was kind of the one that ran before that some years ago. Just good TV. I mean, you can mention The Sopranos, a whole bunch more. The West Wing for me, if I was to pick any of them, I'd go, yeah, The West Wing. And a fine theme from it too.
Excellent choice. To finish, a cultural buried treasure. And you have given us a poem by Spike Milligan called Smiling is Infectious. Why so?
Because, well, I don't know if you've ever had the good fortune to meet the lovely Spike.
No,
Spike was daft as a brush, but he was a very well-meaning man. He was a very kind man, but he would be high as a kite or he'd be very low. It all depended. He had mood swings, unfortunately, manic depressive. But I was mad about him. Now, Spike Milligan, I better explain this. Spike Milligan was a star before I had a clue. Do you know what I mean?
It was from the Goonies, wasn't it?
The Goons, yeah, all that stuff. So it was a friend of mine whose older brother was into the Goons. Do you follow the logic?
Yeah.
So in other words, I wouldn't have, the Goons were gone long before I had a clue. And as a result, but I'll tell you the thing about Spike Milligan. He always sought to make light of situations, to make things better, to make things bright. He, a man with a great heart. And for me, he was very, very special. So so that's why I picked that. And incidentally, you can pick all sorts of things to do with Spike, but it was his genuine kindness that he had in spades. And I think that was, for me, the thing about him.
I'm going to make a crack at reading the poem. Smiling is infectious. You can catch it like the flu. When somebody smiled at me today, I started smiling too. I passed around the corner and someone saw my grin. When he smiled, I realised I'd passed it on to him. I thought about that smile, then I realised its worth. A single smile just like mine could travel round the earth. So if you feel a smile begin, don't leave it undetected. Let's start an epidemic quick and get the world infected.
There you go, that's a buried treasure.
Thank you so much, Marty Whelan, for joining us on the Culture Club.
The Last Word on Today FM.